This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Have a listen to this. Have a listen to this.
Now, that kind of talk this week dragged Australia's share market to
this
a two-year low.
There are, of course, complex reasons for that.
He was the big spender. Right. The big spender.
Doing the grocery shopping can take a huge chunk out of the family budget.
And that's finance.
Hello and welcome to Comedian versus Economist. We demystify the world of money and help you get a handle on the bigger picture. My name's Adam and we're joined as always by my little older brother and real life economist, Thomas. Hi, Thomas.
Yeah, g'day, Adam. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. Nice to be back. Back from holidays. Did you have a good couple of weeks off?
Yeah, I did. I did. Took the kids crystal mining. It's what we do up here in Mullumbimby.
As you do. Yeah. Did you fill your boots? Did you get some crystals, some sweet crystals?
They make you pay for it, actually. So we.
Oh, what?
Yeah, mate. Because
inflation is getting everywhere. It's even hit the crystal market. That's good. It's nice to be back. Nice to be back. Nice to have a holiday too, or as I call it, a lolliday. Managed to jump up and do a bit of stand up over the break, so that was fun. Mm. Just as soul crushing as I remember it. it is good. It's good fun. As always, big show coming up. So let's get stuck straight into it. Inflation is blowing up again, as it does. I guess if it wasn't, it wouldn't be called inflation. It would be unflation. BMW, more like BM trouble you, as owners start to hack their cars. We'll find out why. But first, Thomas, last time we took a break over Christmas, the markets all went to custard. So 2 weeks off. Thomas, what did we miss?
Yeah, no, the markets they're up. They're going well. Yeah.
Tally-ho.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe we don't have as big an impact on the market as we initially feared. Now, things are looking pretty good. So the US market, that's up now. Well, yeah, it's like, so we've had a shocker of the year through the first 6 months of the year. Mm. The US market was down 20%, the worst half-year performance in 50 years. But now it's up 12% since hitting a low.
Boom.
Yeah. NASDAQ's up 16.4%. So, yeah, and now July is the third, for the US market, is the third best July ever and the best since 1939.
Really?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that way. I'm not picking up that vibe in the media and stories. It's all still very doom and gloom.
It is. It's a weird rally. And so a lot of people, and this is a similar story in the Aussie market. It's up about the same amount, about 9% or something. But it's not like there's a catalyst for it.
Mm.
Karen Maley in the AFR calls it the things can't get any worse rally. Everyone in the market's going, well, can't get any worse. Only way from here is up.
But that's what I reckon though. There's a lot of people that seemingly think things can get significantly worse from here. That's the tone that I'm getting. Maybe I'm reading the wrong. Maybe it's all the I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the narrative building around the rally at the moment, there's sort of two things. One is earnings. So we've had it's earnings seasons in America. We've had some big results. You get your big names at the moment. So like Amazon and Apple and those guys, they all came in better than expected. So not amazing, but analysts were expecting it to be a lot worse. And so it's better than expected. And so people go like, maybe it's not so bad. Pinning a bit of hope on that. And the other thing is monetary policy. So Jerome Powell from the Fed, he was saying that he thought the Fed was getting closer towards neutral, that interest rates were having their impact. The latest statement said recent indicators of spending and production have softened. So markets sort of took that as a bit of a dovish signal, saying like, oh, the Fed's going to not be so aggressive from here on, and maybe we've gone past the peak of the hiking cycle. There's still more hikes to come potentially, but it's not going to be as dramatic as we're potentially fearing.
He was saying all that on the same day, though, that he announced a 75 basis point rise.
Yeah.
Which, that was the bit that got me. It was kind of like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of positive talk coming from Fed Chair Powell. It's like, well, yeah, but he also did mention 75 basis point increase on the interest rate. Not sure if you guys picked up on that. So it just seemed like everyone was happy to ignore that almost. Or is that because that was already priced in? Like that was to be expected already. So no one was like, well, this isn't a surprise. It's not almost, it was just bizarre that it wasn't almost even newsworthy.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost in the fine print, really. Yeah. Oh, yeah, P.S. we're hiking by 75 bips.
And we're going to hike more. Like it wasn't the end. It wasn't like, because I was always thinking it would be, the markets would turn when they kind of went, all right, well, we reckon that's it. That's the last hike that we're going to do. And then all the markets would have gone, hey, nice one, and started, upward trajectory again.
Yeah, that, you got to be forward-looking. You got to be ahead of the market. So it's always trying to anticipate the future. And that was the pivot. We're saying, like, rather than this sense you had out of the Fed that's like, oh, my God, everything's out of control, the whole economy's on fire, we're going to have to keep hiking. They're more like, yeah, okay, we've hiked and now it's having an impact. Some of the data is softer. And so that was like the signal to the market. So they took that as a signal, like, okay, he's not as aggressive as he was a month ago.
Oh, did the bear market start? And if so, is it now over? Is this like the commodity super cycle that we had last year that lasted for about a month and a half?
Yeah, this is the question in markets right now. So is this rally sustainable? Have we found a bottom, and is it onwards and upwards from here? Or is this a false signal, what they could maybe call it, like a dead cat bounce, where we just get this sort of lift and then things tape and keep going down? I saw an interesting stat the other day saying, like, in the dot-com collapse in 2000, so between March 2000 and April 2002, the NASDAQ fell 78%, so a huge fall. But in that time, it rallied more than 10% on 11 different occasions, and in one rally added 45%. So, so there's a lot of cases in history where the market gives you a false signal where it looks like it's found a bottom, but it hasn't. It keeps going down. So this is the question that remains. So, like, is it onwards and upwards in here? And particularly because, you know, it's that idea that things can't get any worse. Like, that's not a lot to hang a recovery on. There's a bit of sort of hope in that mix. Like, so inflation's still not contained and killed. So that's one part of the story. So, like, they're raising rates. That seems to be working. The economy seems to be slowing, but we don't know. And there is sort of some hint of wages pressure. Latest wage read in the US is showing wages growing up over 5%. So that seems there's some wages pressure picking up there. So maybe inflation isn't done, which means that interest rate hikes aren't done either. That's still a risk.
And what about the R word, like the recession? My understanding is a recession has a definition, right? That recession is two negative quarters of GDP. Is that right? That's the recession.
Yep.
So the US had that. And then Joe Biden and others came out and went, well, yeah, it's a technical recession. Technically, it's a recession. Well, I'll give you that, but it's not really a recession. Is it a recession or is it not a recession?
Thinking about recession, the reason we care about recessions isn't because of the stuff that we're producing. So GDP measures the stuff that the economy produces. And when it goes down for two consecutive quarters, that's a recession. And that's bad. But it's not bad in and of itself, in the sense that it's really worse that we have, 1% less stuff in a quarter than the previous quarter or something like that. The reason we care about recessions is that typically unemployment lifts when you've got a recession, and that creates real human impacts because people lose jobs and they can't afford mortgages and then they stop spending and all these sort of things. So that's why we care about recession. And I think the point that they're making there is that, yes, GDP is slowing, but unemployment remains very low and wages are lifting. So there's not the human toll that normally goes with a recession. So while it has GDPs printed negative, it's not your classic recession in the sense that unemployment's lifting and there's bad social outcomes.
You can call it a recession or you can't?
No, it's definitely a recession. Right. Yeah, okay. Like, no dodging that. But like it's not saying like it's, you know, the worst of times and things are really bad. And typically, like, because I think the case, if it was your classic recession and GDP is falling and unemployment's really high and getting worse, then you wouldn't be raising rates. You know, you wouldn't raise rates into a recession. It doesn't make sense. Mm. And so they're saying, like, and that's sort of what the economic commentary it's sort of saying is like, yeah, it's technically a recession, but it's still inflationary pressures are there. Unemployment's still very low. You still need to raise rates.
Right.
To head off inflation.
And so just on the interest rates thing, so the markets are all comfortable with rising rates now there?
So the RBA is going to meet tomorrow. We're recording on Monday. They're meeting tomorrow for...
Very inconvenient that the RBA chose to meet on a Tuesday.
For our
show.
Yeah, I know. I mean...
Might have a word with Phil at that.
Next time we have dinner, raise it. Yep. Yeah, it is awkward. But, yeah, so markets are saying 90% chance of 50 basis points tomorrow. That seems pretty likely. Mm. But the terminal rates now where the market's pricing in, that's come off a bit. So it's down to around 3% now, whereas two and a bit months ago it was 4.5%, something like that.
Right.
So it does seem that markets are sort of starting to walk back some of the worst fears about where rates could go in Australia and probably in America too.
Right.
So still on the way up, but probably not headed as high as we were worried about 2 or 3 months ago.
All right. Well, there you go. So maybe it's the bottom. Maybe it's not. Hopefully that helps you with your investing decisions. All right, Thomas, we're talking about inflation, and this segment is brought to you by InvestSmart's Intelligent Investor. You can find them at www.investsmart.com.au. Thomas, inflation data is out this week. What did we learn?
Yeah, so it was up. It met expectations, though. So it's strong numbers, but in line with expectations. So it didn't really rock markets. We got 1.8% in the quarter, now 6.1% over the year. So 6.1%, that's the highest level since the introduction of the GST back in the turn of the century.
They said it would be a problem when they brought it in, the GST. They said it was going to cause a problem, and here we are. A little bit longer to play out than people thought, but
no, yeah, well, I mean, it jumped up to 6.1% back then, but only for like a couple of quarters, and then it sort of worked its way out of the system pretty quickly because it was just a one-off shift. We're not seeing that, so it was 5.1% over the year to the last quarter, to the March quarter, now 6.1% to the most recent quarter. So it's rising and it's probably going to stay high going forward.
Right.
Yeah. And now, and importantly, like in terms of the RBA, like it's the furthest it's been from their target band. Remember, they target 2 to 3% inflation. It's the furthest it's been since the early 1990s. So yeah, right. Generational change in the inflation outlook. We haven't had, most people, you know, don't remember inflation this high.
No, I barely don't remember inflation at all.
Yeah. So the trim means up to 4.9%. So that's higher since I've started tracking the trim mean back in 2003. Yeah, so it's a strong result. I mean, interestingly, so energy's not in this data yet. So electricity prices are lifting, and that's sort of the way the energy market's structured. It's going to take a while to feed through into retail electricity prices. So we're not seeing that in the data yet. So that means there's more pressure coming through the pipeline. But at the same time, commodity prices, particularly oil and wheat, they've started to fall off their most recent highs. So that's going to put some downward pressure there. And if you look at the quarterly numbers, it was 1.8% in the quarter, but that's down from 2.1% in the previous quarter. So if that sort of trend continues, maybe suggesting that we've passed the peak in inflation.
What's New Zealand doing? Because they're the canary in the coal mine, aren't they?
I don't have the data peaked? To hand. I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to check.
Yeah, I'm not going to believe that we've peaked until I've seen New Zealand peak.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a mixed bag. So, yeah, it's strong. I mean, part of this, I think, is why we talked previously about like the markets sort of ratcheting back their expectations for the terminal interest rate, terminal cash rate. I think this is part of the story. Like it's not getting out of control. It's sort of in line with what markets are thinking. Yeah, so I was reading the Intelligent Investor, there's an analyst there called John Addis who has lots of great stuff. But he sort of broke it down saying, like, you really got to look at this in terms of supply and demand. So at the moment we've got supply shocks and they're in the news a lot. So we've got the war in Ukraine and, you know, gas prices and all of that. And then you also have the demand shocks as well. So it's like the pent-up spending from COVID and government stimulus measures coming through and they're feeding through. And so the question that the RBA is thinking and what markets are trying to unpack and try to understand is inflation temporary? Is it as it's sort of vaguely suggesting at the moment that we've passed peak inflation, that this inflationary impulse is going to move quickly through the system and we're going to return to sort of more normal levels of inflation? Or is it more permanent?
I'm curious though, how long do we get to answer this question? Because this is inflation transitory or is it more permanent? I think was first asked, we started talking about it 8 months ago. How long do we get before we have to just go, well, it's permanent. Yeah. It's at least more permanent than transitory, because I don't know that we, like, you know, we're still going to be here in 3 years' time going, well, we're not sure yet. It could be permanent or it could be transitory. We're still, the jury's still out. Like, yeah, it's been 3.5 years.
I think what you're looking for is when inflation starts to feed back on itself. And this is sort of why everyone's sort of asking about the wage price spiral. Is that's when inflation starts feeding back on itself. So inflation goes up and then people demand more wages to compensate for inflation. Firms start pushing up prices to compensate for higher wages. That pushes prices up, which then people need more in their wages, and you sort of get this feedback loop. And that's what you would sort of call permanent. I think once you see evidence of that, that's when you say, oh, yeah, this is permanent. This isn't just a temporary thing moving through the system.
Okay.
Well, like, I read a couple of pieces by John Addis, and I like what he's saying here. He's making the case that there's no evidence of the wage price spiral yet.
Right.
He doesn't reckon we're going to see it anytime soon. So saying it's not in the wages level yet, particularly in Australia. Our wages data is a bit slow, but even in America, like, there's some hints, like, wages are definitely lifting, but they're not likely to get a run on. It doesn't seem. Well, definitely, and that's definitely not in the data.
Why is that? Why are we not going to? What's the rationale for us not having a wage price spiral?
So John Addis points to a couple of things. Like, the first is that the union power is down. So if you go back to the 1970s and like the wage price spiral that started then, which is sort of like the classic textbook example, union power was much stronger. Union membership was about 50% of the working population back in the 1970s. It's down to 15% now. So unions union membership has tanked. And alongside that, so work stoppages, so strike action, that's down 97% on where it was in the 70s.
That's because strike action now has to be organised on Reddit and things like that rather than through unions. Organised cohesive unions have now been replaced by Reddit forums. Boy, do you reckon we should strike? Yeah. We've got three people there.
Yeah. Yeah, so the unions really cemented that sort of wage price spiral because they were actively organising and making sure that their workers were keeping pace with wages, were keeping pace with inflation, and they're building it into agreements formally.
Right.
But union membership's down. Partly that's about sort of like policy settings that have undermined union membership, but it's also about the structure of the economy, that we've moved away from a manufacturing heavy economy towards a more services sector, and services just generally is less unionized and has always been less unionized. So as the composition of the economy shifted, that's eroded unionization rates.
Is it possible too that with rising inflation, people are having to cut some spending and they've just gone, oh, I just can't pay these union fees anymore?
Yeah, maybe. I wouldn't hang my hat on that.
I'm going to get rid of my Stan subscription. I might stop my pause Disney and maybe I'll just ditch the NTEU for a while.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure that's not it. Yeah. So that's happening. I mean, we are seeing some. So Starbucks is on a unionization push. So there's 200 stores in America that have unionized in the past like 2 or 3 months or something, or maybe 8 months or something like that. Like it's quite strong. There's a strong push there, and that's sort of partly fed by a tight labor market as people feel like they've got more bargaining power.
Right.
So we are seeing some hints of that, but I think we're not going back to 50%. And that's the point that John Addis makes, is that wage price spiral was a kind of an artifact of an economic era where unionization rates were really high. And in the absence of that, you're not going to get that automatic feedback loop.
Right.
Yeah, so that's okay. Part of that. Yeah, and the other point he makes is that immigration's going to pick up sometime soon. So while the labor market is very tight at the moment, so unemployment rate's 3.5% in Australia, that's the lowest in 50 years. A lot of that's come from the absence of immigration, which has sort of lessened the pool of labor available, which has then changed the unemployment rates. So once immigration returns, that should take some of the heat out of the labor market and some of the pressure out of wages.
Mm.
So pulling all those together, like he's saying, it's hard to see a wage price spiral getting out of control, particularly given how aggressively the RBA and the Fed have hiked in recent months.
Is he suggesting that we're not likely to see inflation keep accelerating then? It's gonna start tapering off now?
Yeah, I don't know if he's saying it's peaked necessarily, and partly because, like, you look on the supply side, there are still things that are feeding through, like the electricity prices. So that impulse is still coming into the inflation data. So while it's temporary, it's still not there yet. So we might still see inflation pick up, but it won't be long lasting. And it might not necessarily be the case that you want to meet that with aggressive rate hikes, because it'll pass through relatively quickly.
Cool. Well, if you're interested in more articles or analysis like this, then head over to Intelligent Investor on the InvestSmart website, investsmart.com.au. We'll put a link in the show notes, make it nice and easy to find. We're going to take a quick break now and be back with more comedian versus economist right after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, Thomas, finally on the show today, BMW owners have started hacking their cars. What's going on there?
BMW has introduced microtransactions. So there's been a push in business to move to subscription models for everything. So basically just like to get a steady stream of money out of your customers rather than one-off payments. So, you know, Microsoft Office is now a subscription versus a one-off payment. You can buy underwear on subscription.
What?
Yeah.
Underwear?
Yeah, you just get Undie Club or something. You get like one pair of underwear a month or something.
As long as it's not like one of those sharing type arrangements where, you know, like a... like pants sharing or something.
Yeah.
You can dial up some undies to be delivered within minutes. People can make spare cash out of their unused underwear.
Hey, you got 10 pairs of sitting in your drawer doing nothing. Put them to work. BMW's jumped on that bandwagon. Now offering subscription features to unlock things that are already built into the car. So like heated seats, for example. You can you got to pay money to access the heated seats. The heated seats are there in the car, but they're not turned on until you pay a subscription and activate them.
I keep reading this as well. Like people are talking, like, you know, it's become like the heated seat story. Like everyone cites this, but there's a bunch of other features. Mm. And the one I'm not sure why we're not talking about is the fact that you can buy simulated exhaust sounds.
Yeah,
like, right. That's the killer feature, isn't it? You buy a BMW, instead of the twin turbo 3 litre inline six, you can make it sound like a child pretending to make a car noise. Imagine that as you leave the lights.
I know. Oh, it's so dumb. Like, because they're talking about electronic vehicles, like, the beauty of them is they don't make noise and they're just going to, like, simulate some noise on them and pay for the privilege.
Like, this sounds like a complete ripoff, but are there any good arguments for this model?
I don't think so. There are some arguments people are making. I just wouldn't rate them myself. So someone's saying, like, that, like, with the heated seats, like, not every customer wants to pay for heated seats, but if BMW is going to put a heated seat option into their cars and a non-heated seat option, like, that increases the manufacturing expense, and then if you're shipping different cars around the place, that increases the cost. So it's a way to get costs down by just giving everyone heated seats and then only turning them on for the people willing to pay for it. It's sort of an idea that maybe that makes it cheaper. It makes it cheaper if you don't want heated seats. But I don't know. Like, that sort of then implies that if you are paying for heated seats, you're paying more than the marginal cost of the heated seats because you're paying for everyone who doesn't get the heated seats option.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So that means you're necessarily paying more. Like, it has to be the case that.
But you could get heated seats for, like, selectively within your own car though too. Like, you could get them just for winter, but you could also, if you wanted to be mean, just get one for yourself and leave the passengers just to sit on cold seats. That'd really spice up the next family holiday.
Just punish the kids if they're being naughty in the back.
Yeah.
And turn off your heating. Don't make me do it.
Talk about first world punishments.
Yeah.
But this is an old problem. Like, I remember I bought a CD once, right? It was a placebo CD. I wanted a real CD, but all I could find was a placebo. Waka waka. Now, I bought this placebo CD and it had this digital rights management on it, and it just, all it meant was that I couldn't play it on my Discman. So what I had to do was I had to put it in my computer, work out a way to bypass the digital rights management, rip it onto my computer, and then burn a new CD so I could play it on my Discman. Like, I think the problem is if you make anything accessible at any point, then you're gonna run the risk of people are just going to work out ways around it, and they're going to work out a way to access it. So the heated seats are in the car, and that's what's happening, isn't it? Now people are like, well, I'll just work out how to turn on the heated seats because you've put them in there. So I'm going to fire them up.
No, it's going to create a whole niche industry of BMW hackers. come round and turn on your seats for you.
We saw it with Android and iPhones. Like, people started jailbreaking their phones to get out of the kind of the walled garden of Apple and whatever, to try and, what do you call it, sideloading apps and stuff like that. The problem is, like, in doing so, they also effectively, like, wiped out any of the security protections that were offered by those walled gardens as well. So then their phones got hacked. So, I don't know. If you're worried about paying microtransactions for your heated seats, then the alternative might be that you now have to pay a hacker $20,000 in Bitcoin to unlock your car. I'm guessing the BMW warranty is going to be pretty much void if you've hacked your own car to unlock the heated seats.
Yeah. I think that's how they get you. You'd take it into the BMW service center for your service, and they would go, oh, someone's hacked open your thing. Your whole warranty's void.
Oh, man. All right. We might leave it there. We do thank you for tuning in, of course, once again. And you can find lots of other great shows from Equity Mates Media. Get Started Investing, Equity Mates Investing Podcast, You're in Good Company, Talk Money to Me, Crypto Curious, and, of course, The Dive. We'll be back again next week. We look forward to talking to you again then. It's bye for now.
Comedian vs. Economist is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Comedian vs. Economist are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Comedian vs. Economist acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.